Hello and welcome to the Will Soccer Talk podcast, your weekly dose of talking about watching soccer on TV, online and apps. Coming up on episode 64, we discuss the latest news from Telemundo and Fox Sports regarding their World Cup coverage plans, news about MLS TV ratings from the first week of the new season, as well as changes happening in Serie A and much, much more. Plus, we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, aka The Gaffer, and I'm joined today by Kartik Krishnaya. Now, for those listeners who haven't had a chance to listen to this show before, this is the only soccer media podcast out there. So we do everything from looking at the games we watched this past week, making some comments about the commentary, the production, etc., to also discussing some of the news that's going to impact your viewing experiences, either on television, online, or apps this season or in coming season, and some of our analysis and thoughts and opinions about TV ratings, etc. So let's go ahead and kick things off, and let's see what you've been watching this past week, Kartik.
Yeah, obviously we had a rare Thursday game in the Premier League with Arsenal playing Man City, a makeup match. Ironically, they were playing the same weekend as the final, which they ended up playing each other in the League Cup. This happened with Man City 2 years ago, actually, when they played Liverpool in the final of the League Cup and then played them midweek in a makeup match. So irony again there.
With our Kartik, though, I must say it was great to have Carl Martino back.
And that was what I was about to say.
I think you want to move on to the next day. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, Carl Martino returned. It was great to have him back after the USSF election. Obviously, some of us see him in a whole new light now. He offered some very progressive ideas for the sport in the United States, but then back to talking about the Premier League. There were people who were complaining to me on Twitter that he didn't talk about his failed candidacy for U.S. soccer. It's a different audience, folks. So there was no need to belabor that. That's over. That's done. We've moved on. So it was great to have him back. Not a good good game for Arsenal. I think other than Aaron Ramsey, who I thought had a very, very good game for the Gooners, they just seemed switched off for much of that match. City was going through the motions for much of the match as well.
Yeah, this one, Kartik, I have to just applaud Carl Martino for being out for so long and coming back and first game in, just giving him some really, I mean, just really crystal clear analysis from the get-go. And I've missed him. I think NBC Sports have missed him. And he really, I mean, to me, he's better than the two Robbies. The two Robbies are great too. He is the best analyst. So even though he didn't win the election, I'm glad to see him back. So a huge, huge plus for NBC Sports and for soccer in the United States.
Well, of course, as he said, he'd been out for 10 weeks, and the issue was the same when he got back 10 weeks later, which was the Wenger issue. Could have been the same as 5 years ago, really. The predecessor podcast of this, I remember Richard Farley and I having the same conversations as about Wenger in the 2010-2011 season, in the early months of 2011, February, March of 2011, and getting all this hate mail from or hate tweets and emails from Gooners fans who probably now are the ones holding up the Wenger out signs or not going to matches or watching matches anymore, ironically enough. So it's actually longer than 5 years. That was 7 years ago. So anyway, watch that. That night was the USA-Germany game where there were brutal conditions. And the USA goal came, this was in the She Believes Cup in Columbus. The USA goal came largely, I think, because of weather and wind and the U.S. being able to take advantage of having the wind at their back in the first half. Germany unable to take advantage of that in the second half. Germany had a brutal She Believes. Anyway, didn't do very well in the competition. The next day, Gladbach and Bremen, Aaron Johansson scored a couple goals for Bremen in the comeback, and of course he was playing out wide. A lot of people may not have realized that and may have thought he was just playing up top, and I saw all kinds of comparisons between him and Jozy Altidore. Over the weekend, a lot of soccer. Burnley Everton, I had the TV on, but the match, quite frankly, wasn't of a high quality. Southampton Stoke, watched that match. I thought that was a high quality match in midfield. The finishing for both teams reminded us why they're both fighting relegation and are having, from both sides, their worst year since coming up into the Premier League. Best match of the weekend for me, watching from an entertainment level was RB Leipzig and Borussia Dortmund. That match was so good that it stopped me from going to a college basketball game. It stopped me from watching the Premier League game on the other channel, which included Liverpool, by the way. Derek Ray and the former QPR striker Patrick Agyeman were the commentators, BT feed, and I thought Agyeman was really good. I had never heard him before, but seemed to really get the flow of the game, knew the two teams pretty well. I'd never heard him before, but former favorite of mine on Football Manager, so it was neat to listen to him.
Yeah, it was, so far this season, Leipzig has been a joy to watch, and of course they're in the Europa League too, and they're just a really fantastic, entertaining, attacking side to watch, and I'm hoping for bigger and better things from them.
Yeah, me too. And as I said, I really enjoyed that game. Dortmund's good to watch as well. Although now with the two draws, the match against Augsburg the previous week, and then this Leipzig game under Stoger, the revival seems to be stalling. Two draws in a row. Napoli Roma. This was a great game. I don't think Napoli played as badly as the score might indicate. 4-2 loss. Some fortuitous luck for Roma, and plus they took their chances, right? They had four chances in the game. They scored four goals, and they beat Napoli 4-2, which at least for now changes the complexion of the Serie A title race, and obviously tragedy struck Serie A overnight that night, so we didn't have any games. Sunday we haven't had any Serie A games, I believe, since then. So that was... that was an outstanding game to watch. Watched Monterrey Puebla on Saturday evening. That was pretty good. Funes Mori, the former FC Dallas Academy product who went to River Plate and then and whose brother is actually playing for Everton, made us, had a great goal to start the game for Monterrey. But then Puebla came back and scored three. And then let me finish up my Saturday with the way I think a lot of Americans finished up their Saturday with the Super Clásico, which was just a great atmosphere. Two high quality goals, really good first half. Second half was a little static at times, but Univision's presentation and production levels of Liga MX matches, particularly big ones in Saturday prime time, now that I'm watching more and more of that league. I used to watch this league a decade ago pretty religiously and stop. I realize it's far beyond even what you're getting for MLS from the same network.
Interesting. Yeah, I missed that game, and I'm not sure what I was doing on Saturday night, but I wasn't watching that game, so that's unfortunate. But we'll get into TV ratings a little bit later in terms of who was watching that match. I saw most of the matches that you saw, Kartik, just a few exceptions. I saw the Brighton-Arsenal game, and then, of course, Barcelona against Atletico Madrid. And but the big one really, well, actually the Barcelona Atleti and the Brighton Arsenal game were on Sunday.
Yeah, I saw both those games.
So the only one I saw on Saturday that was different than yours was Houston against Atlanta. So the first nationally televised MLS game, and this one was on Univision and Univision Deportes Network. And I watched this one, and I switched it off at halftime. And the reason being is that the defending by Atlanta United was absolutely woeful. I couldn't believe it. At halftime, it was Houston, fully deserved, 4-0 ahead. And I was like, man, this is just so one-sided. It's not even fun to watch. So I just switched it off. But I just could not believe how bad Atlanta was in the back. So definitely some warning signs there. But with a Major League Soccer, you never know. And this weekend, Atlanta could bounce back and... score a 4-0 win of their own. Who knows? But that was my Saturday. And then, like I said, too, kind of going into Sunday with the Brighton Arsenal, Barca Atleti to kick things off. What was your Sunday like after that, Kartik?
Yeah, Brighton Arsenal, Barcelona Atleti. And I have to say on Barcelona Atleti, love Ray Hudson, love Phil Schneider, known those guys for years locally. But it's they try to be objective during a Barcelona game, or I should say this about Phil Shane, it's not him, it's Ray Hudson, try to be objective, but then there's just a presumption of, like on the offside calls, there were three or four really controversial offside calls against Atleti, the last two against Diego Costa, one which I think almost certainly would have led to a goal, the second that chopped off a goal, and there's a presumption of... presumptions of guilt by a Barcelona opponent, is how I would describe it. In the way those matches are called. And look, I mean, I understand that Letty's not everybody's cup of tea. And I, you know, I go to Twitter during these Letty matches, whether they're playing Real Madrid or Barcelona, normally Barcelona, over the course of the last, since Simeone really got that team playing well in the 12, 13 seasons. So now five, six seasons. And there's just this constant drumbeat about how negative they are, how their players are too rough, how they're, which by the way, I don't think they were in this match. If anything, this was kind of an unathletic performance for much of the match. But I don't know what people expect from Simeone. They just want Letty to throw up their hands every time they play Barcelona and say, hey, we want you to give us a footballing clinic. We're not going to play.
Yeah,
I think that's what some people want. I'm tired of it. I mean, I've been tired of it for years. I think I complain about this every time these two teams play.
Well, the big question is, and this is for whether it's TV broadcasters or soccer fans, is that if a team is playing defensively or negatively, in the perception of the viewer, to try to get a victory, you mean, is that hurting the game? Is that should that be allowed? Which you know, Kartik, and I know, is that you do whatever you can to win the game. So sometimes when you're playing against a much better opposition, you have to play accordingly. So you're not going to play your normal game against a normal team. You're going to play different. Atleti's style is absolutely different. A lot more defensively, even at home, but and from time to time they have, whether it's Griezmann or other players, they have shined. This season's been particularly difficult for Atleti. I mean, they're doing well in the league, but they're not a very pretty team to watch. Not as much as last season or the season before. But this is a good segue, though, Kartik, into the Manchester City Chelsea game, right? Because
right.
I mean, what are your right. thoughts on this one in terms of the way that Chelsea set up?
Yeah, it was awful to watch. It was a terrible match. I don't have anything really terrible to say about Conte's setup. You don't want to just let Manchester City play you off the pitch, particularly in at the Etihad in Manchester. But what I do object to, and I guess this isn't for us as viewers, this is for the Chelsea supporters. Why did it take him so long to bring Giroud on, and why did it take him so long to bring Morata on? It was almost as if. And you know what? I kind of get this because I've done it in Football Manager, and I've done it. Done it in games where I've been emotionally involved working for a team here in the States, where if it's 1-0 and you're playing a superior team and you're getting battered possession wise, you're almost thinking, okay, if I put a striker on and pull off a midfielder and open up the match, it's going to be 2 or 3-0 quickly. Let's hold on to that until the 80th minute. And then, take whatever chances we get. Well, Chelsea got one really good chance in stoppage time. But you wonder if he had brought Giroud and or Morata on in, let's say, minute 60 instead of minute 79 and minute 89, how that might have been impacted. Because, look, there's a lot of fragility. Take the matches against Arsenal out of it, because Arsenal is in some sort of psychological tailspin. I don't know if players have quit on Wenger, people are wanting to get him sacked, whatever. Manchester City has looked very vulnerable against other opposition in the last month. Against almost everybody else they've played, they've looked vulnerable at times. Right. But Chelsea didn't test that.
Right.
Wigan, now Basel. They looked vulnerable in the first leg against Basel. Don't be fooled by that scoreline. Basel probably should have scored first, and ties completely different. So, Chelsea didn't take any risk. And again, I don't know if this is related to a specific match tactic or if it's related to the situation at that club,
right.
Which I think is overwhelming everything that Conte does.
Well, that's the thing, though, too. I think this is two things came out of this match for me. Is one, it was almost the message from Conte to Abramovich and to the upper execs at Chelsea to send a message to say, I'm putting up pretty much a fourth strength squad, and for the most part, and this is the best that we can do. We can't play Man City head to head. I mean, kind of the message being sent. I need more players. I should have had more funds in the transfer windows.
Yeah.
But the second thing, though, too, of kind of the pragmatism, the style of play. I mean, you look at the end of the day, you look at the score sheet and you go, okay, 1-0, 1-0. That's not a bad result against Manchester City. And it could have easily been 1-1. And if it was 1-1, everyone would have walked. Chelsea would have walked away from that thinking, okay, job done, really, to get some points away from City. But that we have to remember, the two, Kartik, is that Conte and all these football managers and all these football clubs are getting paid not to entertain. They're getting paid to get results. And he almost got a result, even though it was absolutely the dullest of the dullest games you could probably all season long. It was horrible to watch. He almost achieved it.
Yeah, so I guess give credit to Conte for that, because tactically Conte has a pretty good handle on the opposition, and his attack, his style, did somewhat stifle Manchester City, but it was different than a Mourinho team, because I think Mourinho's teams, while they're negative and they sit deep against the better opposition, they'll also throw in a tackle or two and try and get into the opposition's head, right? They'll try and play some sort of mind game. You didn't even see that from Chelsea, right? They were just dropping back and letting Manchester City play, but knowing Manchester City, Manchester City's not great in the final third, actually, in some matches against better sides. So they were able to, and I think that might change as Jesus gets back more integrated. And for all the goals Aguero scores, there are limitations his inclusion puts on the movement of other players. I don't want to get into a debate about Aguero. I know a lot of Manchester City supporters get angry when I bring this topic up, because I've never been his biggest fan. But I respect the heck out of the guy. But, I think Jesus is better for the way Pep wants to play. But they had the ability to kind of soak up that pressure, because Manchester City was making one extra pass or a guy was out of position, oftentimes because Aguero would be drifting all over the place. So that was the way that ended. Then watch Toluca and Pachuca, which was a good match. But the thing about Liga MX matches that are mid-afternoon, much like the MLS matches that are mid-afternoon also on Univision, there's no atmosphere. It seems too hot. Real letdown in terms of atmosphere after the Super Classico the night before. I missed the first two MLS broadcasts, national broadcasts of Sunday. I'm a member of a supporter-owned club here in the Fort Lauderdale area, in Mercy FC, and they were playing their last regular season match in the league that they play in. So went out to that, and we finished the regular season with one win, three or four draws, and losing track, but we'll be in a postseason game in 2 weeks. Came back, watched LA Galaxy Portland. I thought that the Galaxy looked really good in midfield. The team has gotten young very suddenly. They turned over their squad, with the exception of Ashley Cole, who's still there, who's the left back. He was the captain, but he's the only guy left from two seasons ago, when they had this cadre of veteran European players. So I liked how they looked, particularly midfield, and the ability to throw on guys like Sebastian Leggett, Servando Carrasco, who came on, and Usadic, who did not come on, but I think could still be an important player for them. So that was good to watch. And then midweek I watched...
Wait, Kartik, let me just jump in on Sunday. So I did watch Seattle against LAFC. Actually, I watched the second half of this one. I missed the first half. And I must say that the last 20 minutes of this game was very entertaining, really end-to-end action. And it's whenever Seattle plays at home in Major League Soccer, it just seems that they can't score. You mean they have so many chances, they just can't put the ball in the back of the net. So it's very frustrating. But a good game to watch, and a huge victory for LAFC in their first game. I enjoyed it. But there was an incident in the game, and I'm like, actually, Kartik, let me ask you this one, because you've spoken to Howard Webb in the past, but there was an incident in this game where Carlos Vela was heading towards the goal, and right on the edge of the penalty area, got fouled. Really, really blatant foul. The referee didn't call it, and instead the ball, I think, trickled out for a goal kick, and the play continued. But to me, why wouldn't VAR be used in an instance like this, where there's a clear and obvious foul and a clear and obvious mistake by the referee? The referee didn't go to VAR in this instance, even though he could have, I would believe. It just seemed very bizarre for such a blatant foul it could have been a penalty or a free kick on the edge of the area. I mean, that's debatable, but there was nothing called. Why would that not be called in a game like this in Major League Soccer when they have VAR?
Yeah, so Howard Webb, they'll score every official on this. It'll be interesting. It would be interesting to ask him if he does a media appearance of some sort, why it wasn't used in that instance. Now, the thing that he stressed to me last season when I sat down with him, now he's the head of all officials in North America, in the United States, but he was at the time working specifically on the implementation of VAR. He had said that it's at the referee's discretion if they don't get buzzed. So in this case, the referee probably didn't get buzzed. And then once the next sequence, as he called it, begins, which would be that goal kick, you can't go back and look at it. Now, that's different than the way they view it in Germany. Yep. And in Italy. And in Germany, I think that would have been reviewed in Germany. Now, my complaint about the Bundesliga has been that they review everything, and it seems to have slowed down the matches, but they haven't, with a few exceptions, they haven't gotten it wrong. Whereas in MLS, what happens is there are a lot of calls that are mistakes that are still standing because of this mandate from Howard Webb, which is to get on with the game because he's conscious of not wanting to break up the flow.
I see that, though, Kartik, as a potential issue, because if I'm Seattle, I hacked down Carlos Vela knowing that that should have been a penalty kick or a free kick at the edge of the area. And I see that the referee doesn't call it. I'm going to try to speed up the play. If it's a goal kick or whatever the next kind of play is, I'm going to speed that up.
Yes. And that was in fact discussed. I'm trying to remember now specifically what Howard Webb said to us about that. But that was brought up. That was absolutely positively brought up, Chris, is the first concern if that's the way you're going to implement it. So, right. Yeah, you're thinking the same way everybody else was thinking.
Yeah, either quick kickoff or quick, yeah. I mean, free kick or quick throw.
Quick free kick. Yep.
Whatever it may be, just speed it up. Don't delay. Just pretend everything's fine and move on. Okay. Well, so what about the midweek games, Kartik? Which ones did you catch?
Yeah, so I watched, obviously... I did not see Manchester United Crystal Palace.
I did. Oh my God! What an entertaining game from start to finish. And typical. I feel sorry for Palace. It's just that these conceding these late goals. I mean, playing their hearts out and actually missing a ton of players through injuries. I mean, Zaha especially. They're fighting. They still got a chance to stay up, but from a neutral's perspective, just a really entertaining game from start to finish. And this one, of course, United pull off the late win.
Yeah, also Loftus-Cheek, who they had on loan from Chelsea, was a big contributor to Hodgson getting them off the bottom and into, for a little bit, what appeared to be a move toward mid-table. But his injury coupled with Zaha, they actually have a few other injuries too. They did get a couple guys back for this match, but it's going to be a real hard slog for Palace. So Tuesday, saw the Champions League pregame show. They brought Ali Wagner into the studio. She decided she was going to spar with Warren Barton. I like the point she was making, which is, by the way, a point a lot of people are making about Neymar. She's not the only one, although Barton seemed so taken aback and offended. But her feeling was that PSG might play better without him. They didn't really. They hadn't been playing particularly well with him either. Yeah. I know people will say they dominated the first 45 minutes in Madrid, but the end product isn't there, and they capitulated badly in this one. And PSG is, again, they're in the same league as they're not in the same league as the top European clubs. And I was going to say that they're essentially not even any different than now the Sevillas and the Malagas and the Leicester Cities and the Manchester Cities and these clubs that have made Champions League runs to the quarterfinals or maybe even the semifinals. PSG hasn't made the semis yet in this era. Six successive knockout stages, but never past the quarterfinals. But they haven't gotten to a final. Mm-hmm. And it's got to be incredibly frustrating, but this was I know a couple of weeks ago on this show, and I took some heat from it. I thought that PSG would win this tie. Real Madrid has since improved their league form. They had one blip in that period, but they've since been playing much better in the league. And this game seemed like a fait accompli. Honestly, it was almost pointless to watch it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I missed this match. I was in New York on Tuesday for a press conference with Telemundo, which I'll get into in a little while. But I just saw the highlights on this one, and Real Madrid just looked like they were on fire. I mean, and PSG, it's unlucky too, just in terms of the teams they keep on getting in these draws, like whether it's even Barcelona or Real Madrid. I'm sure Roma and Shakhtar Donetsk are, looking at themselves going like, we lucked out here, to play against each other for a chance to make it into the quarterfinals. And why couldn't that have been PSG in one of those games? But, the difference between where PSG is right now and where they need to be is still a huge climb up, and, they're not there yet. But, Real Madrid's just, scintillating football.
Yeah, and on Wednesday I saw the last 25 minutes of Spurs and Juventus, and that was unfortunately from perspective, if you are a Spurs supporter or just want to see different teams emerge in European competition, that was the wrong 25 minutes to watch. Yeah. So obviously Juventus gets both goals and they shut it down.
Yeah, I think deservedly so. I mean, it was really, it was an entertaining game. I mean, for Spurs fans, of course, they're going to be just devastated. But for neutrals, I think this is Juventus was the underdog in this game. I think everyone was expecting Spurs to either get a draw, and especially when they went ahead 1-0. I mean, they thought, okay, we've got it. We've got this now. And I'm sure the players probably thought that too. But a really entertaining game, really a huge fight back from Juventus. And for the neutral, just a fantastic match to watch, and just seeing the passion on the pitch and with the fans, I mean, how much it meant to all these players. It was a great watch, which is rare for the Champions League. You know what I mean? Sometimes it's very predictable, but this one was unpredictable, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and obviously I think Fox was able to play up. Would be able to play up either angle, Spurs finally breaking through, or Juventus, the old lady, continuing on. Alexi Lalas was very good in the studio after the match. And I think he encapsulated the sentiment of a lot of people, Chris. I mean, we've given Pochettino so much praise the last few years and so much love for this the young players on this Spurs side, but they've got to win something eventually. Mm-hmm. It seems like we're always talking about this in bigger matches with Spurs, and that narrative continued. And that's the way Lalas signed off, or right before Kate Abdo signed off, said they got to win something. They got to win a game like this eventually. And he's right.
And they came close. I mean, I think at the start of the season, I don't think anyone would have expected them to go this deep in the tournament. They played well. They came so close. I think they got nothing to be ashamed of. They really fought for it. It just was, Juventus, with the experience that they had, very clinical too in terms of the chances that Dybala had, and just some of the mistakes in the back from Spurs defensively. Juventus capitalized on that. So, yeah, congratulations to them. And it's going to be intriguing to see who they get in the quarterfinal stages. It's going to be fascinating to watch.
Yeah, I don't think anyone wants to play Juventus in this competition. Now, I thought that last season too, and then they got beat by Real Madrid in the final, a one-off match. But to that point, I thought they had been the best team in Champions League, certainly in the knockout stages. But yeah, so that was my week. I watched a little bit of CONCACAF Champions League between Seattle and Toronto. Oh, let me mention, Seattle and Chivas. Let me mention, I had watched on Sunday also the She Believes Cup match between the U.S. and France, which wasn't particularly good. Did not watch the U.S.-England game yet. It is on my DVR. We're recording this Thursday morning. That was a Wednesday night match in Orlando.
Yeah, I missed the She Believes Cup this week. Just too much other stuff going on.
But and I should mention, just for our listeners, this match was bumped to ESPN News. I know there were the England game. There was a lot of unhappiness about that among soccer fans. They had this just was unfortunate. They scheduled this match to run concurrent with a couple of college basketball tournament games, conference tournament games, where ESPN is obligated to show those matches or those games on big ESPN or ESPNU or ESPN2, bumping this to ESPN News, which you cannot get on via ESPN3 or watch ESPN, the Watch ESPN app creating even more anger among soccer fans. U.S. Soccer and Soccer United Marketing and those that run She Believes Cup, they need to think about the selection of dates and the potential programming windows that they can get next year.
Yeah, it was bumped, but Kartik, it was originally scheduled to be on ESPN News, and they announced that last week, and we had it on our TV schedule pages. So there shouldn't have been any last minute surprises. There was. I think everyone assumed that it would be on ESPN or ESPN2 or ESPN3. ESPN3 was really kind of the killer in this one. For streaming, it was on Sling Orange, but you would have had to have had the Sports Extra add-on, which is like I think $5 a month extra on top of that to get ESPN News. So still a hassle, and US Soccer definitely needs to think this through a little bit to make sure there's no overlaps with some of the other things going on.
Actually, even if the match had been on Tuesday, they would have been okay. It's a Wednesday or Thursday or Friday of this particular week every single year that there's a problem. So even a problem for some of the college basketball conferences, because there's such a volume of things going on that ESPN doesn't have the bandwidth necessarily to air everything on their main network. So even if they'd had this match on a Tuesday, which would have been tough with the Sunday, but they need to think about this for next year, because I think there's renewed interest and this is going to be unfortunate. This is not unfortunate, but this is going to be something that might shock some Guardian readers. But there's a renewed interest in the England national side among casual football fans because Phil Neville's managing them. So there were a lot of people who wanted to watch this match that I think may not have been able to.
Right. Yeah, and the only other match I watched, Kartik, this midweek that you didn't get a chance to watch, and that was just the first half, was Seattle against Chivas in the CONCACAF Champions League. I watched this one. It was a late game. I think it started at 10 p.m. Eastern. I watched the first half.
Oh, I just mentioned I watched that game. Sorry.
Oh, you did? Okay. But the Seattle game, the first half was really scrappy. I mean, I just couldn't believe how poor Seattle looked. So this morning, Thursday, when I looked at the score to see that Seattle had won 1-0 in his first leg, I was surprised just by how poor they were in that first half. And I wasn't sure if it was the pitch, the turf, which they should be used to, but just lots of losing the balls. I mean, like it was really hard to see any time more than two consecutive passes in a row for Seattle before they would lose the ball or Chivas would intercept. But not a great first half. I didn't listen to the commentary. I had it on mute. But still, the broadcast quality on Go 90 was good. No problems with the stream. Just didn't get a chance to watch the second half.
Well, in the second half, Seattle looked mouth-watering at times. They created, I would say, really five or six really good chances. And they've got a second leg lead going down to Guadalajara next week. This was the best ever night for MLS in the CONCACAF Champions League in terms of matching up with Liga MX sides. Three victories. Toronto beat Tigres 2-1 in Toronto, although Tigres now has an away goal, and Tigres is just such a good side. And then a 2-0 win for Red Bulls over Tijuana, which I didn't the Zolos. I didn't get to watch that match. I did watch the Seattle match, and I thought Seattle was very good in the second half. I would share your observation about the first half. For those who don't know, and again, it's on our website at World Soccer Talk, these matches, because again, I've gotten tweets and complaints that these matches aren't on Fox anymore. They are on Univision Deportes last night. So you can check it out there, or I believe there is an online streaming option as well.
Yeah, Go 90 or the Univision. Actually, I think Go 90 definitely, UnivisionDeportes.com maybe. I'm not sure on that one, but definitely Go 90, which is available for free. Just download the app or go to the Go 90 website. All right, Kartik, we have a new sponsor of the World Soccer Talk podcast that I'm excited to share with you, and that's a company called Away Days, which is a small and independent clothing brand based out of Boston. Away Days creates unique, beautifully designed soccer t-shirts. One of their most intriguing products is called Mystery Kits. For $25, you pick your jersey size and you receive a mystery one. All of these are official club jerseys from around the world. They could be a few years old, but they are all 100% new and authentic. Away Days only features unique teams from different countries. So, for example, if you are a Arsenal supporter, you wouldn't want a Spurs jersey, but you probably wouldn't mind a Swedish club's jersey. And some customers have used this to start following teams they have never heard of before, and it helps them learn about how the game is played and more about the country or the club, wherever it may be in Sweden or around the world. It's a cheap way to get some more jerseys, and it's a way to get jerseys of teams you wouldn't normally be able to get from big websites or stores. And to World Soccer Talk podcast listeners, you get a special 15% discount on the entire store. Just go to awaydaysfootball.com and enter your promo code WORLDSOCCER, one word, at checkout. Again, that's awaydaysfootball.com. Check them out. Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news.
Yeah, and Telemundo Deportes, as you mentioned earlier, you were in New York for the big event on Tuesday. They revealed this week that Viviana Villa, Argentine commentator, will join its coverage this summer as the first ever female analyst, co-commentator for some of us, to call the FIFA Men's World Cup for U.S. television. She'll be one of the analysts that will appear in commentary booths throughout Russia. Previously, she worked for Football Power Todas in Argentina, has been covering soccer for 19 years on radio and television. Telemundo Deportes also announced a star-studded cast of analysts that will be joining their coverage. There were 12 of them in all. We're only going to name a few of them for you here. Tab Ramos, Diego Forlan, Chucho Ramirez, and Nene Cubillas, who lives in our neighborhood in my neck of the world, and is a Peruvian legend, the greatest Peruvian player ever, and Fort Lauderdale Strikers legend. I will tell you, I used to play soccer with Nene Cubillas as kids when I was 6 years old. So kind of cool for me.
That's right. Definitely a legend from Peru, World Cups past, and Fort Lauderdale Strikers. So, McCartick, meanwhile, on the same day on Tuesday that Telemundo made those announcements, Diego Forlan especially, that's a huge name, Fox Sports announced that they have a resident DJ on the set of their World Cup Tonight show, which is going to be with Fernando Fiore. They also revealed their theme song for the World Cup, which is a classical music piece entitled Where Angels Fear to Tread. The other piece of news from Fox Sports this week is that they have a billboard in Times Square. So before my meetings on Tuesday, I had a chance to go to Times Square to check it out and take a picture of that. It looks pretty neat. But overall, though, Kartik, I must say, in terms of how Telemundo really kind of emphasized their coverage and what they're planning on doing, they're really focusing in on authenticity. I can't remember the number of times they mentioned the words authenticity in that press conference. They're really kind of focusing at giving the most authentic, the best World Cup ever. And there with other members of the press, they really give a good presentation in terms of what they're planning on doing. They are planning to announce more names in the near future. They already have a long list of stars that are going to be working to bring this World Cup to you. But yeah, overall, very, very impressed. They've got, and actually one other thing too, from an advertising perspective, they said that this is going to be the most, Telemundo is going to spend the most amount of money ever, whether it's English side or the Spanish side, on advertising and promoting this World Cup than ever before in the United States. So they've got big plans. They've got the World Cup for the next three World Cups, just like Fox Sports. And they made a very, very positive impression on Tuesday.
Yeah, that's that's a pretty big deal, because also just to understand the dynamic in Spanish language television in the United States, Univision is the clear market leader. Telemundo has been trying to climb the ranks and be kind of a co-number one. And this is an incredible property to do that with, to climb that ladder. So we'll see how they do, but it all sounds are very promising. Moving on. La Liga TV rights in Spain are up for bid for the 2019 to 2022 season. And La Liga president Javier Tebas has some interesting things to say. He said, there is still a lot of time until the auction. If no one bids, it won't matter. It might actually even be a good thing. And you ask why? Why would he say such a something that sounds so outlandish? Because it could accelerate the model already being increasingly adopted by other championships to market the rights themselves, he said, much like MLS does. His goal is to increase domestic rights from 1.1 billion euros to 1.3 billion euros per year. And I should mention, Chris, I can't remember if we talked about this on the podcast last week. There is talk now that the Premier League might do the same thing with those final two packages that they have. They might just buy back the rights themselves.
Interesting. Yeah, we talked a little bit last week about how the Premier League was looking at if Amazon did go ahead and acquire those, to watch that closely to see if that's something in the future that the Premier League could have their own subscription model and go direct. But if Amazon is not kind of willing to pay the price they're looking for, that's fascinating if the Premier League does decide to do that in the UK. Again, that's UK only, but still that'd be huge for the UK if they can do that, which makes sense. I mean, it's the way things are heading. It's probably earlier than they anticipated, but and who knows too? It could be that they're dangling that carrot and saying, okay, well, if you guys don't pay whatever the price we're looking for is, we'll go ahead and do it direct, to try to get Amazon to say, okay, well, all right, we'll give you a little bit more, here you go, type of thing.
That's what I sensed when I was told this late last week. That's what I sensed might be going on. Yeah,
because I don't think the Premier League is ready, though. I mean, they have no experience in this area, one. And two, still, illegal streaming is rampant. So by doing that, that's going to lessen the value of their product if a vast majority or even a large percentage of those people are actually watching those games illegally anyway and circumventing that whole subscription model. So it could be just kind of a warning from the Premier League to try to get Amazon to go ahead and clinch that deal. All right, Serie A is introducing two more rounds of matches between Christmas and New Year. Serie A will also schedule three rounds of soccer over the Christmas holidays on December the 22nd, 26th, and 30th of 2018. This season, the Italian Football League stayed open over the Christmas period, but with just the one single round of matches. So Serie A definitely pushing hard. Traditionally, they've always had their winter break. And now you're looking at the Premier League considering their own winter break. The Bundesliga, of course, always having a winter break. But Serie A making a big push here. A big push really to compete against international rights, TV rights, and really kind of looking at, say, the Premier League or other leagues. And an interesting move. I still think that that December 26th, Boxing Day, the timing of that Serie A having matches on that day, that they're looking at the success that the Premier League has had worldwide in having those games and the TV numbers and Serie A trying to fight back there.
Yeah, this is a very very, very interesting development. We'll have to see how it plays out next year and then how it maybe increases or improves Serie A's television profile, particularly in the States, if it stays on BN, because there's no Spanish matches or no French matches in that period. So moving on, Amazon is partnering with La Liga for a new documentary series following the success or at least the critical acclaim of Juventus' first team on Netflix, on rival Netflix, and then also Amazon's own original series with Manchester City, which will debut this summer, but has been much talked about. La Liga has gotten in on the action. So I think this is a trend, a very positive trend for football fans throughout the globe, but a trend that we're going to continue to see.
Now, I've heard from one of my sources that the Turner Sports streaming service that we'll be launching later this year is supposed to be absolutely incredible. One of my sources had seen it and said, was just raving about how good it is. Of course, this hasn't been released yet. There's been no announcement. There's been no name or anything. But the buzz I'm hearing internally, not from Turner Sports, but from elsewhere, has been extremely positive. Now, one of the main features of this streaming sports package subscription service is going to be the Champions League and Europa League games. And approximately, I think was it, I think in total, was it Kartik? It was about 20% of the games will be on television if you combine both. And then,
If you combine both, right? If you're just looking at Champions League, it's about half.
Right. And the interesting thing though, too, I was looking back, I think yesterday about the Champions League, is that we're in the knockout stages now, right? So we've got four games on a week. You mean two on a Tuesday and two on a Wednesday. And starting next season, Turner Sports, in the knockout stages of the tournament, instead of having the four games on television that we're accustomed to having with Fox Sports, only two of those would be on television. So you're probably looking at the Tuesday, whatever the biggest game would be, and then the Wednesday, whatever the biggest game would be. And those two other games then would be only available through the streaming service that they have. So it's going to be a big change. There was somebody on Twitter that mentioned, just kind of ranting about Fox's coverage of the Champions League. And I said, well, in some ways, you have to be careful what you wish for, because you might a year from now look back and go, wow, actually, Fox had most of these games on television, if not all of these games. And now we have to pay X amount of dollars for this Turner subscription service. We'll have to wait and see, though. There's still a lot of question marks, but this will be one to watch.
Oh, although I'm not sure necessarily the knockout stages, because there's one in a three Eastern time match next year.
Yeah.
So the
timings change. So it will be staggered. So a game at 1 o'clock and 3 o'clock on the Tuesdays, and then one at three on the Wednesdays. But still, only two of those games would be televised on Turner. And then the other two would still be on streaming only. So, we'll have to wait and see what happens there. But definitely one to watch. All right, Kartik, let's move on to TV ratings and some big numbers this past week. We had the opening weekend of Major League Soccer. We had the Super Clásico between Chivas and America. We had the Barcelona Atleti, really a title decider. Manchester City against Chelsea, and some other big games throughout North America on United States on streaming and television. What for you jumped out as some of the most intriguing numbers that came out this past weekend?
Okay, so 456 for ESPN for Seattle LA is up from 411 last year for their opener. However, given the amount of promotion that was put into it and the droning on by ESPN in some regards. I've even seen it this week during College Basketball Championship Week. Lots of ads for MLS for the game this week, the Atlanta DC United game. But maybe that number wasn't as high as you would expect. Now, for FS1, let's get into that. So in 2015, they had two matches opening night like they did, or opening weekend like they did this week, this year. 289 and 268 were the numbers in thousands. 289,000, 268,000. In 2016, it was 267,000. So pretty consistent, not great, but pretty consistent. 375 last year, big jump. This year, 180 for that LA Portland game, 168 for Sporting KC and Kansas City. That is half the number, approximately, or actually less than half, that they had last year. Pretty stunning.
Yeah, I posted this on Twitter too, and asked people kind of to explain why, to get their thoughts. And we had a whole ton of different reasons why people had said everything from lack of promotion to pro-rel to MLS sucks to, I didn't know the game was the typical stuff. To me, though, Kartik, I watched maybe the first probably 5 or 10 minutes of the Sporting KC NYCFC pregame. And even before it started, if I close my eyes right now and try to predict how it would start off, it's so predictable. And that's the thing with Fox's coverage, is that that it's going to be Rob Stone sitting next to Alexi Lalas, and they're going to have a nice little jovial chat about, isn't it great how Major League Soccer is back? And we're so exciting. We've got Sporting KC against NYCFC and coming up. And it's just too predictable, too formulaic. In many ways, too lazy. I mean, it seems that Fox has kind of just said, okay, we'll just keep on doing what we're doing because it's working. And it's not working. And I watched about, 5 or 10 minutes of that pregame broadcast. with intentions of probably watching some of the game, probably not all the game, but I was curious, and I just switched it off. I was like, this is boring. I'm not interested. Let me move on. And I'm not sure if that's just, again, that's just me, but I'm not sure if other listeners or other viewers share the same sentiments. But to me, it's just overhyped, not really exciting to watch. Now, for me, the Seattle LAFC on ESPN, that was engaging. That was unpredictable. I mean, you had the halftime interview with Bob Bradley in the bus with Taylor Twellman. I mean, that's shaking things up. And Bradley had some really interesting things to say, very open and honest about his opinions that I disagree with completely. But it was interesting. It was entertaining. It made me watch, even though I didn't like what he had to say about his time at Swansea. But it's exciting. I watched that. And again, that was the half time I watched, and then all of the second half. And that's me, Kartik. What do you think about Fox's numbers? Why are they dropping year after year?
I think there's less eyeballs on Fox Sports 1 and Fox Sports 2 in general. And other than that, I can't really explain. They promoted it pretty heavily. I thought I was under the impression the type of viewer that watches MLS likes the way Fox presents the matches and likes Fox's kind of propaganda-ish side to it. So to be honest with you, I can't explain. I mean, I know why I wouldn't watch Fox. I know why I prefer to watch MLS on ESPN and have for the entire duration. This is now year four of this contract. Why I have for this entire period that it's been this current contract. But because of, I think the commentators are better. I think the presenters are better. I think the analysis is sharper. The interviews are more cutting edge. They're more hard hitting. All of those reasons. The production, I think, is better. The graphics are less loud. They're more subtle, but more informative. There are countless reasons why I, as a connoisseur of this, prefer ESPN. But I was under the impression that the average person, and maybe again, it's being views being skewed by social media, Chris. Average person you see who's an MLS backer, and they're not just MLS fans, right? They're backers. They're very vocal and aggressive about promoting the league. That league on Reddit and on Twitter and these other places on the internet would take more kindly to Fox's coverage. Mm-hmm. Now, if there's that kind of drop off from ESPN to Fox on MLS on the same night, from 456 to 168 for the very next game, which, by the way, they were promoting on ESPN was going to be on Fox, FS1. What's going to happen during the World Cup? What's going to happen during any number of other events Fox has?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of backlash against Fox. And I think part of that is actually even from the U.S. men's national team and just them overhyping this team for years. And with MLS being so intertwined with U.S. soccer and a lot of people being dissatisfied with how everything ended with U.S. soccer, it's having an effect on Fox and Major League Soccer. And that's the thing with Telemundo this week is, I mean, they kept on preaching authenticity, and they're providing examples of how they're being more authentic, and you know, I mean, and also from having NBC's Premier League coverage, which is the sister company, doing such a good job on the authenticity, having Andres Cantor, I mean, being the most authentic voice of U.S. soccer. Of soccer in the United States. I mean, that's one thing. The other thing, though, Kartik, too, and we've talked about this privately so many times, is New York City, NYCFC. This is an away match for NYCFC. This is right. One of the most major metropolitan cities in the United States. You would think that it's NYCFC. You would think that, I mean, having a team in the city, you'd have a huge number of fans in the New York area tuning in to watch an away match against Sporting KC. And then you have 168,000 people tuning up to watch it. That's a huge red flag to me.
Yeah.
So some of the other numbers, Kartik, just to throw out there. I mean, and again, one more thing on this one too is that ESPN's numbers were up. Univision's numbers were up too. So it's not a MLS issue per se. It is, to me, it's a Fox issue. And I don't know. I'd be worried if I was Fox. Some of the other big numbers, Kartik, this past...
But let me point out, sure. It was 411 to 456. That was it, the jump for ESPN. LA wasn't in the top 10 markets for that match, and they had it was LAFC's first match, and they had promoted it like they'd never promoted MLS before. So I would still be concerned about that. That's not the kind of jump. Given the amount of promotion, I thought this maybe it's unrealistic expectations, but given the amount of promotion I saw, I thought this match was going to have 650 to 700. Plus, we keep hearing about how LAFC is a game changer for MLS. It might still be from some sponsorship perspectives and some other perspectives, but from the TV profile standpoint, it wasn't. Although I should say, obviously, we know a lot of LA fans travel. They showed that Delta flight and everybody getting on it and a full flight full of LAFC fans going to Seattle. But I'm not sure I would be that encouraged by that number either. I'm just being perfectly honest with you.
That's true. Now, putting that into context too, you had the Barcelona Atleti game, which is on Sunday, 10:15 Eastern, and that was on BeIN Sports and Espanyol. This one, Kartik, had a massive number for BeIN Sports. 752,000 people tuned into this match. I think it was like 593,000 of those tuning into the Spanish language broadcast. I mean, those are some incredible numbers, especially considering how many homes BeIN Sports is in compared to ESPN's and the Foxes of the world. You also had some other big numbers. Of course, the big one, the huge one, 2.5 million people tuned in to watch Chivas against Club America on Univision, which was simulcasted on Univision Deportes Network on Saturday from 10 p.m. Eastern to midnight. Just a huge number, which actually that number beat the NBA broadcast, I think was on Saturday with Boston for the 18 to 49 audience. So huge numbers there for Liga MX. No surprise there, but still great to see that there's a lot of passion and a lot of numbers and a lot of interest in soccer in the United States. Man City against Chelsea, the abomination, had 785,000 viewers on NBCSN and Telemundo. I think Telemundo had about 200,000 of those viewers. And let me see, any other numbers that jump out? U.S. Women's National Team against France on ESPN2 in the She Believes Cup had 397,000 viewers. Some good numbers there. And anything else, Kartik, that jumped out?
Well, that didn't get anywhere near the promotion of the MLS games on ESPN, the She Believes Cup match. And that was running concurrent with Chelsea-Man City, which, of course, was a terrible match. And you could theorize some people switch channels, but probably not the case. So, again, national team, and this goes back to my entire point about Soccer United marketing, U.S. women's and men's national team matches are what generate the interest in that bundled television contract. And you're seeing it again with She Believes without much promotion, almost matching the number for MLS, which we heard ad nauseum about for 2 weeks.
Yeah. And I said it before last week, and I'll say it again. Imagine if any other league, soccer league in the United States, had the amount of promotion that Major League Soccer gets across all of these networks. I mean, ESPN, Univision, and Fox, all cross-promoting each other, and had the time slots that these games have on ESPN, you mean the worldwide leader in sports, Fox, and Univision, the over-the-air network. I mean, these are huge opportunities, and these should be slam dunks for Major League Soccer to get some big numbers. Disappointing from the opening weekend. Okay, listener mailbag. We've got a few comments this week. First one up is from Dave Brunk, and he sent in this email. He says, the highly promoted MLS opener between Seattle and LAFC has been a mess. He says, starting on ESPN News, which I had to look up the channel ID, to the sudden cutover in the 10th minute, to the production issues in the pregame, it makes you think they weren't prepared. And the turf field also looks horrible on television. My son and I went to the Houston-Atlanta game on Saturday. The weather was pleasant, the pitch was perfect, and the home team crushed the opposition. I'm beginning to conclude that Major League Soccer will always be better in person than on TV. What do you think, Kartik?
Yeah, first off, I completely agree on the turf, right? Watching Seattle, Portland is a little, I think Portland's turf may be a little better than Seattle's turf, maybe. They're both turf, though, bottom line. And I agree with that. When I, to be honest with him, and I had a game I went to, as I mentioned earlier, a him or she game at the same time, him or she FC game, and I came back and I DVR'd the Seattle game, but the turf made me fast forward through the whole thing and just delete it and watch the Galaxy-Portland game, which was going on live at that time on FS1 instead. So I agree with that, and then as a Floridian, I got to defend the Atlantic Sun Conference title game with Florida Gulf Coast running over. That's a conference that has smaller programs in the state, and they get one game a year in all sports on a big ESPN network. That's this, the men's basketball championship. So maybe it's, again, ESPN's fault for scheduling college basketball games. And we talked about this before. It even spilled over into MLS Cup, although MLS Cup, they had tons of pregame, right? So it cut out maybe 10 minutes of the pregame show. But inevitably, this was probably going to happen. But they have ESPN News as a spillover for pregame. You missed a little bit of action on main ESPN, but minutes or 10 minutes or so. So I think it was all good. The production issues I can't speak to, although, look, I think that there are always things in the first match of the season that are hiccups. And ESPN in general does drop in Fox at this. The ratings also kind of bear out.
All right, Kartik, next up we have Giuseppe Alberto, who sent in this tweet. He says, I listened to the podcast today, and I am one of those people who feels that VAR takes away from the beauty of soccer. It's too slow and not ready to be used in these big games. I also agree it's huge for the sport of soccer in the United States to get the World Cup in 2026. Now, to follow up on that is that FIFA has announced that they will have VAR at the World Cup this summer. Which sends kind of shudders down the spines of so many different people. But I think it has to be said that the FA for the League Cup and the FA Cup have done a disservice, really, to VAR, to the technology, because it's been handled so poorly. That is probably not the par that we're looking for. It's not what we're looking for, but that's not the standard of VAR that we've seen through the Bundesliga and Major League Soccer and other leagues. Yes, there's still growing pains, but yes, it does take away from the beauty of the game, but hopefully FIFA makes the correct decision here. And knowing them, they'll probably pick their own technology, but hopefully they learn from some of these other leagues that have been using it for a year or two. All right, next up is Dan Mayakort, and he sent in this email. He says, hi, Chris and Kartik. I am posing this question specifically to Kartik. Could you reconsider comparing everything to college basketball? The latest pod had at least three references to the ACC, SEC basketball, mostly around the topic of video review. In my opinion, the comparison doesn't add anything to the discussion, and it feels out of place. I listen to you guys for the soccer takes, not to fall into the common American trope of comparing soccer to other more American sports. I don't always agree with you two, but I always enjoy the pod. Keep up the good work. So, Kartik, any response to that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't like the comparisons to American sports. I, in fact, hate them. But it's the only point of reference I have on replay, because I don't watch the NFL. I don't watch NHL. I don't know. Does NHL even have replay? Maybe they do. Maybe they don't. I don't watch cricket, which has had replay and technology implemented. I do watch tennis, but it's not kind of the same thing. It would be for goal line technology. So I apologize if I've overdone it, but it's the only point of reference I have. I don't watch any other sports other than football. Or soccer, as we call it, sorry.
Jack Mann, or Mahon, sent in this email. He says, we know that Sepp Blatter has lots of friends in the African Federation, and many of those countries probably still look favorably on him because of FIFA's because of FIFA bringing the cup to South Africa and by extension the whole continent. Do you think the recent rumbling about Morocco is his way of looking for a way to exact some vengeance upon one of those countries that had some part in bringing him and his private empire down? I mean, I know FIFA doesn't operate in the realm of fair, but it's CONCACAF's turn, right? And Kartik, rather than you answer that one tweet, let me move on to the next one, and maybe you can discuss your responses to both of them at the same time. So the next one is from Anthony Bello, and he sent in this email. He says, hi, guys. I would like to set the record straight on the talk last week on the World Cup 2026 bid. Let's start with this. The North American bid for the World Cup would not have a single stadium built for the World Cup. the bid is using existing NFL, CFL, and Liga MX stadiums. If a city builds a stadium, it wouldn't be for the World Cup. It would be for the NFL, and World Cup matches would happen to be played there. Second, yes, the Olympics are coming to LA in 2028, but overwhelmingly, majority of the venues have been built and are up at the moment. LA could host the games tomorrow. With lifting a finger. In both cases, the public funding for these events will be minuscule compared to Morocco, which, according to the article, will cost $1 billion. $1 billion to build 15 stadiums or not having to do anything. What is more fiscally responsible? One more comment. Let me get this straight. The world throws a fit when Fox cuts a payment in a contract, but doesn't blink an eyelash when Qatar pays people off and we have to come in and arrest everybody. I guess the view is payments out in the open are evil, while payments under the table are okay. And if the US loses the perception in this country, will be Morocco paid FIFA off. It's FIFA. They did it once. Why wouldn't they do it again?
Okay. A lot to unpack in these last two tweets. I'll try and be as concise as possible. First off, Morocco themselves have allegedly been the victim of FIFA corruption, losing out on the World Cup bids in 2006 and 2010. Potentially because of corruption. I think we're almost sure in the case of South Africa, that's what happened. It's a little more murky in the case of Germany in 2006, if that's why Morocco lost that bid. But that's I want to throw that out there. Secondly, I am tired. Look, I didn't want to any longer really criticize print media in this country and bloggers and such, because we went through a trying time with the USSF election. I respect the job. Everybody does. But we have now once again entered a phase of cheerleading. And it's cheerleading now for this bid rather than for anything tangible on the pitch. You know, cheerleading for MLS squads or cheerleading for the U.S. men's national team, the U.S. women's national team. It has become about this bid and imputing the motivations of anyone who would vote against a U.S.-led bid. Imputing them as being corrupt or somehow bitter or angry, imputing FIFA or any of the confederations who might have an interest, confederations or federations, EXCO members who might have an interest in putting the World Cup in Morocco, a country that was denied the World Cup twice in recent memory by close votes. And as I said, one for certain due to corruption, the other due to alleged corruption. And we're in this realm again where we're saying, okay, everything is perfect with the U.S. If it doesn't come here, FIFA's corrupt. They're a horrible entity. There are reasons beyond corruption and money and political power within FIFA that people might vote for the Morocco bid. Okay? Now, I'm not saying that there isn't some motivation of potential corruption. There isn't some motivation of political power for someone. If you can advance within FIFA or within one of the confederations, or also marginalize Sunil Gulati, who is not a very popular character with some folks over at FIFA and in federations like CONMEBOL and UEFA, etc. We're in this mode again, Chris, where we're cheerleading, we're impugning people's motivations, and we're basically saying if the U.S. doesn't get it, FIFA's corrupt, world football's corrupt, and we would do a great job, we do a perfect job. Why isn't it here? We're entitled to it. I'm tired of it. I really am. Yeah. It's getting – and I want the U.S. to win the World Cup bid. I'm not saying I want it in Morocco. It, obviously, for every reason I think you and I both, Chris, would want it here, but it's getting – I don't know. Maybe it's just the tendency of a lot of our supporters and the media here where they have to have something to cheerlead for and something to be exceptional about.
I think the thing that makes this very complicated is, depending on how you pronounce it, Qatar or Qatar, that bid really makes things difficult. Obviously, I mean, there were payments. Obviously, I mean, FIFA executives were paid off to get the World Cup to Qatar to play in a desert country that's it's going to be a complete disaster, that they had to move the tournament from the summer to the winter because of the weather conditions. I'm sure once the tournament... if and when the tournament happens, it'll be okay. But that's the example. That's the bad example of how it kind of really changes everything. The discussion of any World Cup, whether it's Morocco or North America or others, everyone's going to point back to Qatar and say, okay, well, in that case, you mean there were money being basically bribes really being handed out. So that taints everything. And paints everything in a bad light. So it's a difficult conversation to have. It is one of those things that, yeah, you're right, in terms of the cheerleader aspect. Because I think at the end of the day, I think everyone wants the World Cup in the United States, for the most part. Everyone wants the World Cup to be played in North America. It'd be huge for the game here. So, yeah, it's with FIFA, who knows? You can put your best foot forward, and at the end of the day, you hope for the best and see what happens. And if Morocco gets it, great for Morocco. I mean, that's going to be huge for North Africa. Our final mailbag this week is addition by relegation. And he or she sent in this tweet. It says, good example of how VAR is supposed to work in the Cologne Stuttgart game. The goal was scored, ref went to VAR, and within 20 seconds, a decision was made and the match continued. Hopefully the Germans run VAR at the World Cup. And to me, Kartik, I've seen this, whether it's Major League Soccer, whether it's Eredivisie, whether it's Bundesliga, the FA, the League Cup and FA Cup. To me, the Bundesliga one is the best model. It's the best best communication, the on-screen graphics. It's not perfect by any means, but it's the one I like the most, the best so far. So listeners, if you have any questions, feedback, or comments, hit us up on email at web@worldsoccertalk.com. Tweet us at World Soccer Talk, and hit us up on Facebook at facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. We'd love to read out your comments in the next episode. All right, Kartik, so let's move on and close out the show. It's been a good one, but where can listeners find you on the internet if they want to find out your latest articles or interviews, etc.?
You can find me on the internet at KKFLA737, and then obviously at worldsoccertalk.com, and also at sportbusiness.com.
And on the internet, when Carter says on the internet, he means Twitter, and that's the KKFLA.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Which, for the soccer universe in the United States, the internet is Twitter, it seems to be sometimes. So thanks for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audio Boom, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review. And Kartik, what should they do this weekend?
Enjoy your football.